Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. Well, just like in Hollywood, it's award season in our sports field business. So cue the lights, the paparazzi, and all of our groundskeeping brethren as we celebrate the awards being handed out today.
That's right. We'll start off the award season coverage by speaking with Seattle Mariners head groundskeeper, Bob Christofferson, and he's going to tell us all about the Major League Baseball Groundskeepers Hall of Fame. He's also going to tell us who this year's inductee will be at the January 2016 induction ceremony.
And in our Out of the Park segment, we'll have a roundtable discussion with two Major League Baseball head groundskeepers who, in the past, served under this year's inductee to get a feel of how he influenced their lives and careers.
And then we'll close it out today by reviewing many of the awards that are going to be handed out at the STMA National Conference in San Diego. That one is in January from the 19th to the 22nd.
And if we have time, Teresa and I will review each other's fashions we are displaying today on the red carpet as we celebrate these very special groundskeepers. All that and more on this edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast. Well, good afternoon, good morning, good night, whatever it is the time that you're listening to this show. I'm Paul Zawaska, your host of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, and I'm going to tell you, Teresa is looking fabulous today as producer and co-host of the show.
Paul, you're weird.
All I can say is, wow. I mean, you are really playing it up today. You got to listen up, Diamond Da Vinci fans. Teresa has outdone me on the red carpet today. And I love the long, flowing green gown you're sporting. Is that artificial turf that that's made of?
You know me, Paul. I love nothing more than to put on a dress.
The textures are simply ravishing. This gown you've got on leaves more skin showing, though, than a baseball infield, for crying out loud.
Hey, look, you try to find a dress that fits over an 8.5 month pregnant belly, and we'll see how you do.
And, you know, those shoes? Who'd have thought those aerating shoes would become high fashion?
Well, they've been selling them for years on the internet. I figured I might as well give them a shot.
Well, a little spit and polish wouldn't hurt. You could have knocked off the extra dirt that's hanging on. But I'm telling you, you could be my arm candy any day. So, you know, so what do you think of my fancy duds for the award show?
Well, I want to know how you got the actual sod to stick to your suit.
Well, it's kind of like the old stop, drop, and roll. That's pretty much what I did. But, you know, do you like my brown turf hairpiece that I got covering up my follically challenged cranium?
What is that? Is that Patriot Bermuda?
Wait a minute. I gotta turn it around. I like the grain of the grass coming towards the front of my head. That way, when you are standing in front of me and talking, you know, you're looking at the darker side of the grain. Kind of makes me look younger, don't you think?
You know, it just depends. Do you want to look more like Trump, or do you want to look...
I don't have the flip that Trump has. I'm still working on that. You know, the problem with these brown turf hair pieces is they are all one height, and I need a, you know, the turf coming up to crescendo to do a Trump type piece.
So, there you go. Well, that's where you need more than one variety in there.
Well, we are all...
This is the weirdest segment we've ever done.
We are all dubbed out here for the red carpet. We're waiting for some of the people to come strolling down here so we can do some interviews. I think I caught the custodian just a little bit ago. I'm going to try and catch him and see if we can get something from him. But
I just want to know, are you Joan and am I Melissa? Or I don't really want to be Joan either.
Hopefully I'm neither, because I don't have the body for either one of them.
That makes two of us.
Let's start getting right into the awards, and starting probably with the biggest one that we're going to talk about. But first, we got to find a little bit more about it. Happy New Year from Beacon Athletics. And with the new year comes our new 2016 catalog, chocked full of product for you sports field groundskeepers to maintain your athletic fields. If you don't have or never have received a Beacon catalog, simply give us a call at Beacon Athletics at 800-747-5985, and we'll rush one right out to you. You can also request a catalog from www.beaconathletics.com. Our web store has all of our products from the catalog and more. Plus, it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, ready and willing to take your orders. Start preparing for the 2016 season by shopping with us today. So, a handful of years ago, Major League Baseball groundskeepers got together one winter and worked to create the Major League Baseball Groundskeepers Hall of Fame. And one of the people who spearheaded that project was Bob Christopherson from the Seattle Mariners. And we're lucky enough to have him with us today to talk about this little-known Hall of Fame. So, Bob, welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
You're welcome. Bob, can you tell us how this all came about?
Well, you know, groundskeepers have been getting together every January for the past 17 years. We were following the Sports Turf Managers Association meetings around the country, and then the last few years we've been trying to go to different ballparks because a lot of guys don't get a chance to visit other people's stadiums, and it's a good opportunity. And over the course of time, you know, you get to talk about history and the game and where we want to see what legacy we want to leave, and trying to figure out a way to recognize some excellence in our profession in the past. And we landed on the Hall of Fame. That took a lot of years of just discussion and how we're gonna do it. We ended up in 2011. Gary Vanderberg with the Brewers passed away, and we all kind of felt like that was a kind of a turning point for us. We reached out to Bud Selig and he gave us some money to buy a really nice trophy. It resembles mm-hmm. the Stanley Cup trophy. It stands about 4 feet tall. That kind of started it. Our first two inductees in 2012 were Emil Bossert and George Toma. We're trying to recognize the past. Sometimes that's hard to come up with the distant past, and we're working towards that. But every year we try to induct one or two guys at our conference in January. And this year, Gary Vandenberg, who's been away from us for the last 5 years, is now going to be inducted, and the trophy's named after him. So it's great to have him on the trophy as a recipient as well.
So how does the eligibility work for being enshrined into the Hall of Fame? You know, what are the requirements?
Well, you have to be 5 years removed as a head groundskeeper. We do a vote at our meeting, and we try to get people to nominate people that have been in their organization or somebody that they know that has contributed significantly. The basic thing is that they need to have contributed to groundskeeping and or sports turf industries at the major league level, the individual's impact in the community which they lived in. I think everybody that has been inducted really follows that. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot more out there, and it like I said, we're trying to just go forward. Our ultimate goal is to have this trophy sit in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. We invite them to our meeting every year, and hopefully we'll get them to join us one year. But I can give you the list of guys. There's seven past recipients. Like I said, Emil Bossert and George Toma in 2012. Joe Mooney from the Boston Red Sox in 2013. Dick Erickson from the Minnesota Twins and Harry Gill from the Brewers. This is the Brewers' second head groundskeeper. That was in 2014. Mm-hmm. Last year we had Pete Flynn and Pat Santarone from Baltimore. Your old boss. So yeah. I think, you know, it's really a it's a good education for the guys that are in the industry today to hear about these people and what they've done, and hopefully we all make an impact. We're lucky to be in the profession that we're in. We all take a lot of pride in our own field, but we also take pride in each other's accomplishments and, you know, the history of baseball.
So they haven't built a wing on for us yet over at the
No wing.
Are you guys working on raising money for that, or you know what? Can I help?
Well, you know, we haven't. I actually Mark Rasm, head groundskeeper with the Rockies, is our head of the spearheading our conference this year, and I talked to him about, you know, we do need to just continue to go forward, and we take baby steps in this process. Yeah. Try not to make mistakes. You know, we take care of a field at the city that we're in. This year we're doing it's an inner city field in Los Angeles, the Jackie Robinson, named after Jackie Robinson. So that the Dodgers are behind it a lot. It's all just kind of giving back. And we're hoping that, you know, the Hall of Fame trophy and what it stands for will get bigger and bigger every year.
So you've reached out to Cooperstown, obviously.
We have.
And yes. What has been their response? I mean, is it something they're interested in, or is it, you know, we'll get to you eventually?
You know, I think they're interested. I think the one thing about Cooperstown is it's very selective as to mm-hmm. who gets in, how it's done. There has to be a lot of credibility, and I think it just takes time. I think it'll happen.
Well, and I think that's a good thing. You want them to be selective. You don't want them just to have anybody in there all the time. Yeah.
Right. We send the program to them every year, and invite them to our conference. One of these years, you know, part of the problem is we're in January and they have a big ceremony in January too, a big announcement. They kind of conflict a little bit. One of the things that we're going to look at this year is maybe even moving our conference to a different time. It's difficult to pick a time when a groundskeeper's not busy or when the calendar's not busy for one guy or another. But
yeah,
you know, we usually get between 24 and 26 teams there out of the 30 every year. I think it's well attended. We do a lot of fun things, a lot of good things. It's great interaction. And I think the first day of our conference is the day we have a dinner and do the induction. And I think it's every year it gets better. And I think that's all we can ask for. So
that's great.
The problem with this is that we have a nice case that the trophy sits in, but it sits in that case for about 11 and a half months. So we try to get it to the All-Star game, wherever that the games have been played in the city. We try to give it to the team this year, the Brewers. Hopefully they'll do something with it and honor Gary. So there's a lot of things, and again, it just takes time, and I think, you know, it'll happen one day.
Yeah, I think it's spectacular that it's actually happened. You know, there's as a groundskeeper, whether you're still in the industry or like me, who's been out of Major League Baseball, you know, compliments from people, you know, they mean something, but it's when you get complimented by your peers that it really means something to you. So I think this is a great way of acknowledging these people who have in the past taken care of Major League Fields. And you're right, there's a lot of people long before us that we don't know about. And you know, the question is, how can we find out that information of these people? So how did the nominations work? Who brings the nominations to your group then when it's time to vote?
It is the head groundskeepers. There's 30 of us in the league, you're given the mandate when we leave our conference to do your research on your own team. Mm-hmm. If you feel that there's somebody that has been the head groundskeeper in your club's history that warrants it, then put something together and make a presentation. That's also been slow evolving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like anything else. The more you put into an effort, number one, the better the effort is, and then the better the end result is. So
sure,
that's been
sure.
slow moving. It's good to get together and meet and get excited about it. But then, you know, most guys start focusing on their own baseball field. And we need to do a little bit better job of reminding people that, hey, there's a couple things that we have to do that are really for the game, not and for the major groundskeepers on a whole. And, you know, 30 years from now, I want this trophy to be full of names and memories and, you know, recognition of some of the guys that really had an impact on what I consider the best game out there. So hopefully we'll, like I said, you can't get to the finish line. I'd rather do it slow and right, and we're getting there.
Well, thanks, Bob, for giving our listeners the background behind the MLB Groundskeeper Hall of Fame. It's great that there is the opportunity for the groundskeepers to honor the best of their trade. As I said before, I can't think of a higher honor than one that comes from your peers in the industry. And I hope all the MLB groundskeepers understand how important this is. And Bob, I hope you all and the rest of your fellow groundskeepers keep up the good work out there. Thanks for being on the show today.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for having me, and I appreciate all your efforts.
And our very special Out of the Park interview today finds us in the company of two great baseball groundskeepers, both of whom served at one time or another on the Milwaukee Brewers ground crew as assistants under the late Gary Vandenberg, who, as we said earlier, is the 2016 inductee to the MLB Groundskeepers Hall of Fame. So with us today, we have Dave Meller, who currently is the head groundskeeper for the for the Boston Red Sox.
Good
almost
one.
Slipped there. And Michael Boettcher, who now has the groundskeeping position with the Milwaukee Brewers. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Well, let's start out here and just kind of go across the table here and find out how long each of you worked with Gary and with what capacity, starting with you, Dave.
You know, I worked with Gary for 16 years. Had the honor and opportunity to intern with Gary when I was at Ohio State. And then became his assistant. And Gary is family to me, so much more than an employer or coworker.
Yeah, you guys were with the. Of course, when you're working with somebody that long, and of course, as the long hours we put in that tight, you're going to get like family. You're exactly right, Dave. Mike, you?
Yeah, Gary actually gave me a shot to serve as an intern back in 2004 when I was a sophomore at UW-Madison, and then I actually got a chance. Well, I went out and worked for Dave in 2006 out there in Boston, and. Then I came back here and became Gary's second assistant in March of 2009. And fortunate enough, I was able to then become his first assistant in his last year he was with us here.
Mm-hmm. You know, the interesting thing here, Teresa, is that I also interned with Gary for a very short time back in the days when, you know, and typically you didn't go a whole summer on an internship. For a couple of weeks. And when I actually started in turf school here at the University of Wisconsin, Dr. Love, who was running the turf program, said, oh, geez, it's too bad you started in meteorology. If you'd started in soils, you'd have been almost ready to go because the Brewers just called me looking for a new assistant because the previous assistant, Rod Adell, who was also from the UW turf program, had gone to take care of Summerfest grounds.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, crud, there's my one chance to be in Major Baseball. But so I went there for an internship and worked for several weeks with Gary and then head groundskeeper Harry Gill. So we all have had some time of knowing Gary. So Dave, how would you describe Gary's personality? What was he like, and what was his approach to the rigors of the job of groundskeeping at the major league level?
You know, Gary had a happy outlook on life, kind of a laid-back style. And, you know, he taught me so much more about, you know, not just groundskeeping, but about life and how to work with people and have people part of the team. And, you know, I'll never be able to thank Gary and his family enough for the opportunities that, you know, he gave me to prepare me not only for groundskeeping, but help prepare me for life.
And Michael?
Yeah, I can echo that very closely to what Dave said. You know, for me, as a young college student, you know, coming off a small town farm up in west central Wisconsin, you know, I knew a lot about agriculture, but groundskeeping and turf management was one of the things that I was really wanting to learn and grow in. And I don't know if I could have asked for a better teacher, mentor, to ever be presented to me and allow me to work for, as that's what he did. He was an extension of the classroom. Every day here at Miller Park is a classroom, and that's how he treated it. And he wanted to teach and mold young people, and he was, I felt that every single day. And he was one of those guys that he'd pull you aside if you didn't do something right. But if he saw you working at it and you were, you know, working towards the right goal, he let you go. You know, he let you fail a little bit, and if he needed to step in, he would. But, you know, at the end of the day, he was just an amazing teacher that just wanted young professionals to succeed and grow in the industry. And so every day, that's what he was. He was a mentor. He nurtured kids growing up to the profession and made every day here enjoyable. I, you know, working for Gary, besides a couple of things that are out of his control, I don't know if I can necessarily remember more than a couple of bad days working for him, just the stuff that we deal with. And he always made the workplace enjoyable and wanting to come every day. And yeah, I wish I had more, I would have had more time to work underneath him. I feel very fortunate that I got 3 years as an assistant to him to learn everything that that man had learned over his years and the wisdom he could provide. So overall, I guess the words that I would describe him, through and through, teacher, mentor, father figure, friend, you know, all those things.
You know, I think that's really cool. I only had a chance to meet Gary once, and everyone I've ever known who's worked for him has said similar things. And, you know, it's a really remarkable trait to have that in the turf industry. I mean, there's a lot of really great head groundskeepers out there, obviously, who do a very good job at what they do. And there's very few of you guys who are there to be a teacher as well as a good groundskeeper. And I think that's really remarkable and wonderful.
I always very humble.
Yeah. And I would echo that, Dave. You know, I always thought of Gary as like the gentle giant, you know, because he was a kind of a tall guy, and he was pretty soft spoken, really even keeled, which, you know, to me, most groundskeepers I know are pretty high strung, you know, myself included. And he just brought a very calming effect to the whole routine of maintaining a field. And, you know, I never saw him get up at the now, you know, He came up under Harry Gill, and Harry could be explosive. You know, he was more than normal what I expect as a groundskeeper. But Gary was just this very calming effect, very even keeled, and like Dave, like you said, he was very humble.
And he gave me so many opportunities to fail and learn from my mistakes or our mistakes, and it was never an upset moment of, you know, an explosive what to bleep. It was, you know, I'm a big believer that in every challenge and opportunity, there's an opportunity, and he echoed that. It just was always a sense of strength.
Mike, how did your time working with Gary affect you on your career? You know, because with you especially, you didn't have them for a long time before suddenly you were thrust into a different position because you really had to, you know, in Gary's last year of his life, you really had to take over the reins. And, you know, you're very young, you're very green. I would have been petrified. You know, how did the time working with Gary affect you in that way during that time?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I did. I became his first assistant, grounds manager, pretty much January 1st of 2011, and this was about 3 months after Gary had been diagnosed with the cancer, and he, you know, he was instilling me in the first thing that he did after the season ended. We had a concert, Farm Aid, following the season of 2010, and he, you know, recently had told us of his diagnosis, and he pretty much said, "Hey, Michael, you got this." Our first assistant at the time had actually just had her baby in the middle of September, so she was gone, and Gary wanted to spend more time with the family, and he's like, "Hey, you got this. You're going to run the field for this concert," and he pretty much sat me down and said, I got faith in you. You can handle this." And I think that was probably the first thing that he did to me to make me understand his confidence and his trust in me, mm-hmm. that I could continue the field maintenance without necessarily him over my shoulder or watching me day to day. Now, I mean, when I took the position in January, you know, as Gary underwent treatment, you know, I was one of those guys. I was like, Gary's going to be healthy. He's going to go through this in the off season. You know, we always have that off season, and mm-hmm. he's going to get better. He's going to rest and be ready for opening day come 2011. And, you know, it just didn't necessarily work out that way. But at the end of the day, no matter what he was going through, he could have been going through treatments, and same day of treatments, he would come into work and he would ride around the field with me and talk about the field. That's how much he cared about the field and the jobs that we were doing. And I called him every day, whether he wanted to talk or not. You know, I talked to him about the field and things that could be getting done at the time, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, prepping for a game, changing some applications and rates to prep the field differently based upon the weather. But, you know, I think it was one of those things that I was able to do it because he, just like we all we talked about already, is that he put trust in people. He let people fail. And if he knew you couldn't do the job, he made sure that there was something, another way to do it or somebody else to help. But more times than not, he would back me and he would say, "Yes, you got this," and, you know, and talk through a few things. But at the end of the day, I knew he was 100% trusting of me and the staff that was here at the time to make sure that the field was not going to suffer in his absence.
Hmm. I'm sure that had to be an incredibly tough period. What, 8 or 10 months of 2011 as things were progressing along and you were taking care of the field and Gary was progressively getting deeper into the cancer.
And that's what's crazy is that he's a very selfless man, and he would tell me repeatedly, he's like, "Michael, you just make sure that nobody knows that there's any sort of change or anything going on right now." He's like, "I'm going to fight my battle. Yeah. You keep things going here so I don't have to worry about this. And you just make sure that nobody ever realizes that there's any sort of change going on."
Yeah, that had to be fairly pressure-filled for you, I got to think, as a young man just starting out, and you handled it very well.
Yeah, well, we had a great team to work with, so, you know, that's the primary portion.
Dave, you were with him for so long. Is there one thing that Gary taught you that, you know, you'll never forget?
Man, there's just so much about life.
Yeah.
You know, just about friendship and teamwork amongst your coworkers. You know, when I came out of college, I was kind of a hard ass, and that if you didn't work hard, I didn't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I expect hard work out of everybody then or now, but he made me realize people have other stuff going on outside their life and take all that into consideration when you're working with people. You know, he cared about people, and he taught me how to be a better person.
And you know what? That's That's an interesting thing that you remember, because that's something I try to teach a lot of people, is that, you know, a lot of young managers expect everybody else to work the way they do, but everybody's different, and everybody works differently. Everybody works at a different pace, and everybody has the one thing in that they love to do and they excel at. And you have to find that in a person and turn them loose on it, and they will flourish. And
I totally agree.
Yeah, that's a great lesson from Gary that he taught you. How about you, Mike?
You know, I think the biggest thing it's got to be, you know, the ability to roll with it. You know, everybody talks about the big events now that happens, and you know, the events, and Dave could attest to this, you know, the events that they were put through at County Stadium, and now that we're, you know, the events that we get put through here, and all the things that are out of our control, whether, you know, that's Mother Nature playing her little, you know, puppet show with us,
mm-hmm.
the baseball team, the fans, you know, there's so many people that see our work on a daily basis, and there's so many things that are out of our handle. You know, we can't necessarily control everything. And I think when I watched him on a daily basis, I think he emulated on how you handle the unpredicted, and the stuff that we can't control, and finding a way to roll with it and make it seem like, oh yeah, we knew about that the whole time. We saw it coming, you know, we got this. And he would just, it's like nothing ever could fluster, you know. He just emulated that. You roll with the punches, you figure it out, you run on, you know, you figure it out on the fly, and you come up with a solution, and nobody will know the wiser. And I think that was probably the biggest thing that I learned from him, is that, you know, all these things that could rattle us and that can make us as groundskeepers look like, you know, we have no idea what we're doing. He would take those things and be like, okay, well, yeah, that happened. This is our solution. Here we go. Let's get it done. And we pushed on. And that's one thing that I'll never forget about him.
That's cool.
Mike, do you have a favorite story about Gary? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be about groundskeeping. It could be about life, or it could be just about your everyday work at the fields. Is there one story, whether it's humorous or serious, is there one story that always sticks in your mind about Gary?
Man, you know, I think it's got to be the story of probably of when he figured out that, you know, that there was the final straw, and when he told me, this was when I was his third year, this was my final year when he was with us, or that he was with us. And he told me, he said, you know, he pulled me aside one day, and I don't know why this ever, I don't know how it came about, but he talked about the hiring, you know, people that he hires and stuff. And I think this was probably a way of him talking about, you know, how people came through. And we were talking one day on who we're hiring, and you know, what people do in an interview for him to hire. And he always talked about having people that had worked with him before that he liked to promote and work through for a long time. And he said, you know, people can interview really good. People can have a great resume, and they can talk a good game. He said one of the things, though, that he always did when he finalized a hire, he made sure he had got a good handshake. And the one thing he mentioned is that, he said that the people that have a good, strong, firm handshake and their hands are not soft,
yeah,
are incredible workers and employees and people. I don't know.
I love that.
You know,
that's actually very true. And
my grandfather taught me that too.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people teach that, but I find that to be very true in people I've dealt with.
And he was like, you know, the final straw, we weren't 100% sure. We were pretty sure when you walked out of the room in the second interview that we were going to hire you. But he said, you sealed the deal with the handshake, and I found out that your hands weren't soft. And we knew then after that we were going to hire you. I was like, well, I'm good I had my handshake down that day.
And good thing you were a farm kid, too. I have yet to meet a farm kid.
Weren't you working on a dairy farm?
Beef farm. I was a herd manager for an Angus breeder. Okay. Yep.
Okay. If it was, if it was probably a dairy farm, I'd understand that strong hand, all that milking you might have to do.
Right.
Yeah, they don't do that by hand anymore, Paul.
Sorry to break it to you. How about Dave? How about you? You got a favorite story about Gary?
Gosh, you know, there's just so many. You know, so many of them just come back to his love of his family. And, you know, he taught me how much he believed in his coworkers, his family, too. And just a common theme. You know, we had a lot of fun. You know, I had many opportunities to leave the Brewers to go work for other teams. And, you know, Gary, the family atmosphere that Gary had and Mr. Seelig had, you know, the Brewers were really special. And I stayed because of that bond and friendship and family atmosphere. I think a lot of funny things. A lot of those funny things somehow had a life lesson in them too.
Was it tough to leave when you left for Boston, Dave?
You know, it was interesting. I think the Red Sox were the 10th team to talk to me about leaving, and I knew it was the right time to leave. You know, when I came out of college, I was bound and determined that I wanted to be a head groundskeeper within 3 years. And a couple months out, you know, Mr. Steinbrenner called and offered me a job, and I realized there was more to a job than a title or just being in a different team. And my family taught me how important family is. And Gary echoed that. And, you know, the responsibility he gave me opportunity to be part of, I was basically co-director. And so I always felt prepared to go. You know, I remember when Billy Beane offered me a job with the A's, he could not have been nicer. And I was debating if I was going to take that job. And it just didn't seem like the right fit for my family. Mm-hmm. And Bob Bando, who was our general manager, was asking if I was leaving. And I said, you know, Sal, I'm very honored and flattered by the opportunity. You know, Billy Beane could not have been nicer. I said, I just don't think it's the right fit for me, for my family. And he said, no, I'll never forget. You know, he said, you can always find another job. You can't find another family. And that wasn't just my family. That was the Brewer family that I felt there. And Gary's an important part of that love and support, as well as, you know, Mr. Seelig at the time.
Which one of you, or is either one of you, speaking at the induction ceremonies for Gary?
I think we're both going to do kind of a team talk.
Cool. Very good.
You know, Dave worked for him for a lot of years, and, you know, I was, like I said, fortunate enough to get us the 3 years here with him, and so we're going to kind of both reminisce a little bit and show everybody a little bit of peek into his life and family and everything he did for the profession as a whole.
That'll be fabulous. How do you hope people will remember Gary? I'll start with you, Mike.
You know, I think as we talked about how I remember him, and I think how a lot of people have remembered him, you know, that he was one of the, you know, he moved this profession forward. He was a pioneer. I mean, obviously he worked for Harry C. Gill, who obviously is one of our founders of our National Sports Turf Managers Association. And I think, you know, as Harry moved on, Gary picked that up and he took the profession and he took that responsibility of what Harry took on as moving our profession forward. Gary did that same exact thing. You know, he wanted to be a pioneer and he wanted to keep moving things forward as a profession. And, you know, he was faced with the first retractable roof structure here in the upper Midwest. You know, there was prior retractable roofs, but he was the first one here in the upper Midwest. And, you know, he went through challenges and he fought. He was an innovative person that would always try to make sure that the field was never, ever in question. And there's a lot of people that could have said, oh, we can't do this because of the roof. We don't have sunlight. You know, this isn't going to be good. It's you know, we can't do this. He was a guy that always attacked everything and made sure that there was never any question on the jobs that we could do as turf managers. There was never nothing we couldn't do. You know, the theme was that he always talked about, we get it done. And I think, you know, as people look and look back on what he did for the profession, I hope that they do see that he – there's a reason that the award is called the Gary Vandenberg Hall of Fame Award. You know, I mean, there's a reason for it. And I think, you know, as people look at the name on the trophy and then as we talk about him as a person, he is one of those guys that people will be talking about 50 years from now of what he did, not only as a professional, but what he did as a person for so many other people, groundskeepers and anybody of any profession that he did for, because that's what he was. He was a family man, he was a friend, and he cared so much about everybody, and a very selfless man that will be talked about for many, many years.
Dave, any way that you're hoping that people see Gary or how they remember him?
Yeah, I think Mike eloquently covered it all. I mean, Gary was always upbeat and smiling, and no matter what adversity he faced or we faced, you know, he always had a positive outlook on that, on life, and this is how important family is. I think of Gary every day.
I think you two guys are going to do a fabulous job speaking about Gary at the induction ceremony. I wish I could be there to see it. Unfortunately, it's only the other major groundskeepers that see it, but I think you guys will do a fabulous job. And we all miss Gary. Fortunately, we've all had the opportunity to know him. And I can't think of a better tribute to anybody in the profession than to have their peers vote them into the Hall of Fame. And we wish you luck in addressing everybody about Gary at the induction ceremony. And thank you for your memories today.
Thank you.
Not a problem. Good talking with you guys.
At Beacon Athletics, we've been helping America maintain and improve its ball field since 1948. We're innovators. We're out on our test fields every day developing products that simply do the job better, like the Streamliner Chalker and the Sweet Spot Tamp System. Everything we do for the love of the game. We're so confident in our commitment to the industry that we at Beacon have a promise. We'll provide great products and great service so there is no risk for you. When you place an order with us, we know you need your stuff, so we promise to ship all in-stock items in 24 hours. If you're not happy, neither are we. We guarantee your satisfaction, period. We'll refund your purchase price and pay for the return shipping. If you have questions, we have answers. We actually use all of our products, so we know all the ins and outs. We are Beacon Athletics, and that's our promise to you. All right, Teresa, don't take that gown off yet. I know you're itching to get out of that turf, but hey, we got more awards and people to salute for their performance this past year.
But this thing is really uncomfortable, Paul. You're killing me.
You look like a green Chewbacca.
Hey, you know what? Better that than Jabba the Hutt, which is where I thought you were going.
No, not at all.
That's what I feel like.
All right. Well, we've got a slew of sports field, sports turf awards to go through here, and I want to make sure we get through and salute everybody here real quick. So I'm going to go through these here before we end our show today. I'm going to start out with the mowing pattern contest, which was going on. It was basically this involves a Facebook voting contest from October 21st to November 20th, and the winner this year was Blake Anderson. He's the assistant director of sports turf operations at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And Blake takes care of the field at Baum Stadium, which is the home of the Arkansas Razorbacks baseball team. And he has a student assistant by the name of Tyler Carr, who also helps him with crafting that mowing pattern. Blake, by the way, is a graduate of the Eastern Kentucky University, where he got a bachelor's degree there in sports turf management.
Outstanding. So, cool for him. The professors there.
And, you know, we were talking a little earlier. Blake did that on probably, I'm guessing, warm season grass if you're down there in Arkansas. And, you know, mowing patterns in warm season grass is not easy to do.
No, even if you've got a ryegrass overseed, that's still tricky.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on, there's a slew of Field of the Year award winners that are announced every year at the STMA conference. And they've been doing this since 1992, and it's presented to members who manage baseball, football, soccer, softball, and other sporting grounds. at the professional college, K through 12 schools, and park and rec level. So there's lots of winners in this category. They use a panel of 15 judges who independently score all the entries, and they base that on playability, appearance of the surfaces, utilization of innovative solutions, and effective use of their budget and implementation of a comprehensive agronomic program. So there's a lot of different categories that they're judged on, and not always will a judge put an award in every category. He might skip some categories. He or she might skip the categories if they feel that there wasn't somebody there that they felt was worth it. But there's 15 judges, and eventually they end up with a winner in every award area. So,
yeah.
And these awards will be presented then at the annual STMA conference and exhibition down in San Diego on the 19th and through the 22nd. So I'm going to let you, Teresa, read off the winners.
All right. So we have a couple of different categories. In the professional category for baseball, at Ed Smith Stadium for the Baltimore Orioles in Sarasota, Florida, we have Daniel Thomas, head groundskeeper, was the winner for baseball. In soccer, we had to do a little research to figure out how to pronounce this. But the winner this year for the soccer and the professional level is Weston Appelfeller, and he is at the Mafre, that was the one we had to look up, Mafre Stadium at the Columbus Crew Soccer Club in Columbus, Ohio. Weston is a CSFM, and he is the director of grounds at that stadium. There's also a college and university category. In football, at Davis Wade Stadium at Mississippi State University in Starkville, Mississippi. I believe they pronounce it Starkville.
Typical South. Yeah.
Yep.
That sounds right.
As someone who went to school in Lexington and lived near Louisville, that's usually how that goes. We have Brandon Harden. He is the sports turf superintendent for Davis Wade Stadium. In softball, at Cyril Softball Stadium, University of South Carolina Upstate in Spartanburg, South Carolina, we have Bruce Suddeth. That's a tricky one to say as well. He is the Director of Building and Landscape Services. For soccer, under college and university, at Kluckner Stadium at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, we have Jesse Pritchard. He is also a CSFM. He is the sports turf manager, and his assistant sports turf manager is Phil Bathelin. I think I pronounced that correctly. We'll find out. And finally, for Sporting Grounds General at the Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw State University, Kennesaw, Georgia, we have Shane Hobein, also a CSFM, and he is the sports turf manager there. The final category is schools and parks, and in baseball, we have the Ivy Watson Field at Gainesville City Schools in Gainesville, Georgia. A lot of Georgia winners this year. David Presnell is the CSFM. He is the turf manager there. Good job. For football, for schools and parks, we have the North Area Athletic Complex Field at Jefferson County School District in Golden, Colorado. That is Son Roslin. And Son, I'm sorry if I pronounced your name wrong. It's trickier to read than it is to hear somebody say. She is the stadium manager there, along with Christy Clay, also stadium manager. That's the North Area Athletic Complex Field in Golden, Colorado. For softball, we have the Blue Eagle Softball Complex at Clover School District in Clover, South Carolina. That's Will Rogers, CSFM, sports turf manager. For soccer, we have the varsity soccer field at Collegiate School in Goochland, Virginia. That's Allison Moyer. She is the grounds manager there. Allison and I went to school together. Yay, Allison. Congratulations. we also have the sporting grounds division, and that is Championship Field at Pleasant View Sports Complex in Boulder, Colorado. That is John Cogdell, park, turf, and irrigation manager. I love finding out what everybody gets called as far as their professional resume is concerned. We have a lot of different titles.
Yeah.
I think that's great. So, big congratulations to all of the winners there.
It is interesting to note, as you talked about that there's really only one truly northern location here, Columbus, Ohio. The rest of them have really, for the most part, have been in the South this year.
And people from Columbus, because that's how they pronounce it, will tell you they're really kind of Southern.
Yeah, well, they can think that all they want, but they're They're still really north.
But anybody in Virginia will tell you that Goochland is really kind of north.
Well, congratulations to all those people. And if you see them down there at the STMA conference coming up in January, make sure you congratulate them. They've all, I'm sure, earned those titles by doing a lot of great work. We've got one more area we've got to cover, and that is the Sports Turf Managers Association and Minor League Baseball together since 2000 have honored members who manage fields at the AAA, AA, and Single-A, and the short season and rookie divisions.
That's right.
And this year, three of the four honorees are multi-year winners. So, Teresa, if you would, the envelopes, please.
Let's start with our short season and rookie ball. We're looking at David Yearout. He's with the Spokane Indians out of Spokane, Washington. Congratulations there. For our single A, we have Keith Winter at the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Double A, that's Brock Phipps, Springfield Cardinals in Springfield, Missouri. And our big triple A winner is John Stewart, Syracuse Chiefs, Syracuse, New York.
And good for them. And, you know, a lot of these guys are multi-year winners. Both Brock Phipps and Keith Winter are both being honored for the third consecutive time.
Wow.
As they won also previously in 2013 and 2014. And David Yearout, it is his second time winning. He also won last year in 2014. And Stewart, he's the one first-time winner here on the list this time there at the Syracuse Chiefs. Again, the winners here are selected via a 16-member awards committee that's compiled by STMA, and each nominee is independently scored on cultural practices, game day routine, resource utilization, staff management, and the groundskeeper's involvement and support of the sports turf industry. So again, lots of great winners here in minor league baseball. With that and all those awards, that pretty much concludes our award ceremony. You can now get rid of the gown. Well, wait till the show's over. So on behalf of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast members here who work within our vast offices, we'd love to give a great big congratulations to all of you winners this year.
Absolutely.
On your wins, and we hope that your success continues in the coming year. And
that
with
you get
that,
a nice big fat raise because of it.
Well, we always wish that for everybody.
That's true.
So with that, that pretty much closes the book on another award season, and I can't wait to get out of this this itchy grass suit that I'm wearing and let my forehead breathe and take the hairpiece off so we can end this show. Teresa?
Don't miss a minute of our next show. There are many places to find our podcast on the web. Of course, there's our main page at beaconathletics.com/podcast. But you can also download our show on Apple iTunes. And just to preclude Paul from saying it, don't forget, if you do get it through iTunes, we'd love to have a review there. If you like the show, let us know. Let other people know through Apple, and we'd really appreciate that. You can also find us through baseballtalkradio.com or baseballpodcast.net. You'll find our podcast there along with a lot of other really great baseball podcasts for baseball junkies. It's all baseball all the time over there. They've got just about every team. I've counted all the teams. And we've listened to a couple of them so far, and they're really outstanding. So we'll hope you'll check them out.
And we'd also love to hear from you. You can email Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com, where you can send us your questions or comments on our show, good or bad. We'd love to hear any show ideas you have. Send those along. We wait for your suggestions, especially now we're beginning to develop this coming year's editorial content for our podcast. So this is the time to send your ideas in.
And if by chance you're on Twitter, come and follow us. Our Twitter handle is @DiamondDaVincis. That's @DiamondDaVincis. We're not crazy active there, but we do like to post things now and again, especially while we're preparing for the show. And we like to make sure that we get a couple of pictures up there now and again as well.
The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. And with that, I wish you adieu, and make sure you join us next time for a very special show.
Absolutely. Adios, folks.